Moncrief on News Talk.
Cassie Delaney joins us once again from Moncrief's Murder Club. Good afternoon, Cassie.
How are you, Sean? Still reeling after that yogurt fact.
Sorry, yes. I put you off your lunch now. I hope you had it already. So today we're talking, these are all kind of word-themed crimes.
I've done a great pun for the radio. I'm calling this theme War of the Words.
Okay.
So these are all stories that have started either in literary cons or my favourite place on the internet, which is Reddit Hobbyist Drama. So I've got some mad stories today of things that have just gone totally awry. The first one is James Frey. You will know this guy because his book was huge in 2003. He had been trying to sell a book for years. He originally pitched it as a novel. Publishers were not interested. And then he repackaged it as a memoir. And it is the story of him coming from the American Midwest, his drinking and drug problem. And the actual book is written very unusually. No speech marks, minimal punctuation. It's kind of hammering through sentences, almost like this sort of confessional writing style. He tells in the story his journey with addiction, about checking himself into rehab at 23 years of age, how he was barely conscious, had broken teeth, cheeks cracked, hole in his cheek, blood everywhere. He describes violent confrontations that he had. He talks so much about his addiction, how bad it was that he couldn't take anaesthetic when he was under root canal treatments. So it's just this gripping tale. And in it, he has these kind of key stories about the people he encountered and the tragedies in his life that led him down that path of addiction. One of which is a train crash. Another is how the love of his life, a fellow addict called Liddy, had died by suicide the morning he got out of prison. He says in the book he spent 87 days in a county jail, all because of drink and drugs. And when this is published as a memoir, it's huge. It's called A Million Little Pieces. You'll remember the book cover. It's white, all these little sparkly, glittery pieces on it. And it's regarded as one of the most harrowing addiction memoirs ever written. So much so that in 2005, Oprah Winfrey joins the chat and she picks it up as her book club pick of the month.
Ka-ching.
Yeah. This is like, once Oprah says you're good, this is straight to the New York Times bestseller. He spends weeks across from it. She brings him onto the show and is praising the book, the story, calling it a gut-wrenching memoir. And he actually goes as far as to say that if he was going to have to write a book about himself, he was going to have to write in very negative ways. So huge acclaim until this website comes in called The Smoking Gun. And this is a New York-based investigative site that specializes in court documents and police records. And they start unpulling the threads of James Frey's story. And over the course of 6 weeks, what they find is absolutely incredible. There's no mugshot for the crimes he says he committed. There's no arrest records matching the crimes. There's no jail time. Nothing in the story lines up. And so by January 2006, they've published a piece called A Million Little Lies. 87 days in jail didn't happen. It was more a couple of hours under custody because he'd done a few little, he kind of assaulted a police officer, nothing to do with the felony charges that he was claiming. These root canals he did without treatment, just out and out lies. Even Lily, the lover, she never even existed. It was all fictitious. And one of the worst parts was the train crash, which he kind of pinpoints to one of his biggest emotional turmoils. It did exist. It was a tragedy that killed two teenage girls. He wasn't even there. He wasn't even near it. Oh. He just took their kind of, he took their story and co-opted it for his own. So naturally, the wider press get a hold of this and things start to unravel. He appears on Larry King to defend himself and his mother comes in.
Why? I mean, you just go, just I've been caught and run away.
He's still working. Yeah. Like this, nothing. There is not a thing that men can do that will affect their careers, right?
I must make something up dramatic about my life.
So Oprah actually rings into the Larry King show that night and defends him. But then she kind of goes back and she thinks about it for a little while and decides to bring him back on her show, where we have one of the most famous kind of interviews of Oprah's history. A very difficult interview to find. So she's done a great job of scraping this off the internet. And we do have a small clip of time to play it of him appearing on Oprah Winfrey too.
Here it is now.
I don't know what is true and I don't know what isn't. So first of all, I wanted to start with the Smoking Gun report titled The Man Who Conned Oprah. I want to know where they write.
Most of what they wrote was pretty accurate. Absolutely.
Oh, right. So he did con Oprah. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, he conned everybody. So after that interview, his literary agent drops him. The publisher has to set in a class action lawsuit against readers that have been brought who kind of said that they've been sold a fiction of the price of the at the price of the truth. And new editions of the book were later released with a note saying that he kind of made himself out to be tougher and more daring than he actually was. It has since been re-released as a novel.
Oh, my word. And he's still working today.
Still working away. He's got like a podcast. Anybody can have a podcast. I've got three.
Well, I mean, everyone's got podcasts, but that's extraordinary. And they said people didn't ask for their money back who'd bought the book.
I think there was a big class action suit because it just painted such a portrayal of addiction in a way that was totally inaccurate. And like the path from addiction into such level of crime, I think, was a real danger to addicts. So
yeah,
there was a class action suit. Some people got paid. See, he did. He still made loads of money.
Yeah. Now, the next one we're going to, this is around a century ago.
Mm-hmm.
This is so twisted. To this little town in Sussex. So who are the two main players
these
here?
These are, right, we're talking about two women who, despite the odds, become friends. We're in 1920s in a seaside town in Sussex. Little Hampton. Like, doesn't it seem so cute? Mm. And like, just a lovely little peaceful town. It's a working class town in West Sussex, and we have two neighbours. A woman called Rose Gooding moves into 45 Western Road. She's 27, Irish. She is the mother of a daughter, married to a shipyard worker. She's known to swear. She's known to be loud. She was, by the kind of standards of the neighbourhood, a little out there. Next door, you have her opposite, a woman called Edith Swan, who was 30, unmarried, devoutly Christian, the kind of woman who would like help people to go do their laundry and go to the shop. She would go to church for the fun of it. And her and Rose became friends, despite their kind of very different backgrounds. Edith gave Rose a knitting pattern, a recipe for chutney. Rose was giving her a tin bath, clothes pegs, all the kind of stuff. They got on well. But then, out of nowhere, Edith reported Rose to the NSPCC for mistreating a child. Now, we don't know if the reports were accurate or whether it was something that kind of came out as a slight. But the basis of the report were unclear. But then in May 1920, Edith starts receiving letters, and they are like obscene. The language in these letters is often deemed, it often has warnings on it. And one of them calls her a cow, told her to mind her own business. They're vicious, very obscene, very rude, and they're mainly targeted at Edith, but other people in her family are receiving them. One accused Edith's brother of stealing, and several were signed with the initials ORG, which, if you're going to pen anonymous letters to your neighbours full of hate and vitriol, you wouldn't sign them. But Rose Gooding becomes the main suspect. This loud, foul-mouthed Irish woman gets all the blame. She's arrested in September 1920 and denies everything. And she can't afford bail, so she's sent to prison for 2 months while the investigation is going on. In the December, she's tried and found guilty, sentenced to a further 2 weeks. She's released just before Christmas and sent back to her family. But then the letters start going again. So she's hauled back into the courts and the jury deliberates for only 30 minutes before finding her guilty and sending her off to prison. Now, her husband is writing letters pleading with the courts and pleading with the judge, saying that, you know, it's not her, that she's, you know, loud-mouthed but a heart of gold. But she's sent off to prison anyway, an innocent woman sent off to prison. And while she's there, Edith Swan just can't contain herself. So there's things that aren't lining up for Scotland Yard, and they send an inspector called George to Littlehampton in 1921. He wasn't convinced of the official narrative that was going on, so he went in, he started examining the blotting paper in Edith's house, some of the pens and the ink, and he noticed that when he photographed and reversed the blotting paper, it had shown the words that were in the letters in them.
Oh.
But they have to set up a proper sting to really catch her out. So they send a policewoman called Gladys, who is kind of undercover observing the street. She catches Edith dropping the notes into the shared yards between the houses. And she sends Gladys a neighbour to go. Gladys sent a neighbour called Violet May to go pick up the letters, and she finds one that's addressed to Violet May. But she's caught Edith basically dropping it off red handed. But then the best part of this sting is that the police create stamps with invisible ink on them and arrange for them to be solely sold to Edith in the local post office. She buys them, and the letters start appearing with the stamps with the invisible ink on it. So she's caught multiple times red-handed. By July 1923, then, she's appearing in court and found guilty. The the judge had a great quote for her. She called her, she said that the spectacular filth that was written in the papers had to be whispered in the courtrooms. It was that bad. So she was sentenced to 12 months. Never gave us a reason. Never told us why.
How weird. And poor, did Rose get an apology?
Rose got out and got an apology and kind of became, I suppose, a bit of a local hero. A woman wrongfully convicted because of the crimes of the Christian next door.
Yeah. So interesting. Cassie, thanks a million.
Thank
as
you.
Ever, Cassie Delaney there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.